You're listening to The World's Talking with Dave O'Grady. Don't forget, if you have a story, an internet forum, a discussion you want to have, email theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to click like on Facebook, like on Twitter, like on everything, and we'll chat to you then. Yes, you're very welcome along to Talking Rugby. This is the Talking Rugby podcast, episode 9 with David O'Grady, of course, available on iTunes. You can just type in Talking Rugby and you'll get us. You'll find the show. Of course, we're in association with speartackle.co.za. Well, I'm delighted to be joined once again by Alan, who's all the way in Limerick. How are you, Alan?
Depressed.
Yeah. And Peter, all the way in Toronto, Canada. Now, Peter, I'd say that depression has made its way across the Atlantic Ocean and is riding the back of you right now.
Oh, it's a dark cloud. It's still hanging over me.
Well, something very, very difficult to take for a lot of Irish fans across the world. But let's get straight to the point. Any Irishman would be disappointed with the goings-on there last Saturday. There was a lot of hope going into this game. Wales were coming in, they had a good group, you know, they narrowly lost to South Africa, but Ireland were the favourites, having beaten Australia and really turned on the style against Italy. Peter, if I start with you, where do you begin? What do you make of the game?
It's very hard to assess. It just pretty much, in my household, there's been a total blackout since the game. I haven't read any reports and I haven't even watched a replay of it. It's just too hard to take. I'm just simply heartbroken here. It's very tough. I suppose just thinking back to the game, this game, it was pretty much, for me, it was lost before even a ball was kicked in anger. I don't want to blame the players. It has nothing to do with the players or their performance. I think the harsh reality of this game was that we were just tactically, we were very naive. And I think the starting 15 that was put out by Kidney was badly wrong.
Yeah.
It was very poor. I suppose with regards to the halfback combination, it was the wrong combination.
Can I just take you up on a point there you said earlier, there, Peter? You mentioned about the whole heartbroken aspect. I read somewhere in some magazine or that it was doing a feature on you that you haven't felt this broken since I think a lost love, I do believe.
since I was 11 years of age and my girlfriend dumped me, I'd say that probably is how heartbroken I feel after.
Yeah, difficult to take. But anyway, sorry, you were going on about the game. You're saying a bad selection by Kidney.
Yeah, I felt all along that it was a bad selection. The halfback selection for me was totally wrong. We all knew before the game how Wales were going to approach this game, especially with the likes of Phillips playing at halfback. He's just such a big physical guy. When you look at their centres, they're big and physical. Now, throwing in O'Gara was a bad mistake, especially when even you look at the conditions that were there. We weren't going to be able to play a kicking game, so I couldn't see the reason for having O'Gara there, especially with his defensive frailties.
Everybody said, Peter, you start O'Gara in this game. You need the big player for the big game. He's done it before against Wales, and that's why he was, you know, everybody, most people we spoke to were in favour of him starting the game.
Yeah, I suppose everybody was in favour of him starting the game, but I think O'Gara has had such a long career, it's a case of, yeah, he has done it before against Wales, but even when Wales have been fighting amongst themselves and playing very poorly, we still always struggle to beat Wales. And if you ask me, it's purely because Wales know how to play O'Gara. They've always targeted O'Gara. And if you ask me, if we were going to play O'Gara and play a tactical kicking game or a game of that stance, there was no way we should have played Murray. I mean, Murray was just thrown to the wolves by Kidney. He's only after breaking into the game, and to play against a player like Phillips. I mean, Phillips is one of the most annoying scrum halves to play against because he just gets inside your head. In my opinion, if we were going to play O'Gara, we would have been better have Boss there if we wanted someone to kind of defend the O'Gara channel.
Yeah, what about the back rows? There was a lot of talk about the back rows. They should have been more physical or that. I think there was an interesting one I seen, you know, towards the start of the game. It seemed like there was a tone set for the match by Wales when Dunica O'Callaghan was literally just brushed aside, like.
I suppose it was a case. Did the back row? We lost the back row battle. It was built up to the point where everybody thought this was like the clash of the titans, where you had Ireland's much valiant back row coming up against Wales's, and it simply was a case of once again, it's not the fact that Wales's quality in the back row was better than ours, but their tactics was far superior. I mean, we simply set back at the rucks and at the breakdown and allowed Wales dominate it. I mean, if O'Brien was going to try and compete with Warburton, himself and Ferris at every breakdown needed to put him on his ass, simply absolutely cream him. But we didn't do that. It was our usual tactic of just getting the ball and the guys standing around and looking for it to be recycled. And once again, poor old Murray was on the end of an awful lot of hardship because he had no one there supporting him or defending as he tried to get in, you know, to get the ball. It was a bad day at the office, but it was the tactics once again at the breakdown were terrible.
Yeah, Alan, if I can bring you in there, you know, he's talking about the tactics being awful. It was just a bad day at the office. No doubt the Irish lads did us very proud at the World Cup, but I guess coming away from that match and with the annoyance that a lot of Irish players will have with Wales, it's a case of Gatland 1, Kidney 0.
Yeah, I think Gatland does need to take a lot of credit for this, for Wales' rebirth. Because if you look at the team, it is very much his team. There's not a lot of players that were there in 2007. I suppose it is the younger players, aside from maybe Mike Phillips, that you know have become the fulcrum of the team. You think back to the autumn where Gatland took a major punt in giving George North his debut, and it was only 3 months into North's pro career. And if you look at North now, I mean, he's probably one of the most feared strike runners in the game in a sort of a Tommy Bowe mould.
And yeah, he could be really one of the main stars of the World Cup.
Yeah, it was surprising. He actually had a poor enough game against Ireland. He wasn't great, but I think it was a case of he didn't get that much opportunity. And I think because he's a young, kind of naive player, when he did get the ball, he was so eager to do something with it that he probably made the wrong decisions. But I mean, Gatland again, taking the punt on young players. I mean, giving Warburton the captaincy was a big call. And I mean, look at him now. Warburton has just taken the captaincy in his stride, and he's become, I think, a world class player. And again, you look, and then you look at Priestland. I mean, yeah. I've watched Priestland for 2-3 years playing at Scarlets, and he's looked like an average club player. But it's funny as soon
yeah,
as
yeah, the transformation actually, Alan, of yeah. Priestland, could that be suggested that it's Gatland's biggest achievement so far as the boss of Wales?
Well, yeah. I mean, the other players like Lydiate and North, I mean, they were always talented players, but I never thought Priestland was that great, to be honest, but as soon as he got into the Wales setup, I mean, his share price has tripled. It's incredible how much he's improved, because I always thought that Dan Biggar of the Ospreys was always the up-and-coming fly half to replace Stephen Jones, but he's the forgotten man now, and Priestland has become a star of the team.
Yeah, well, we're going to be talking a little bit more about Ireland later, but just a quick point from you, Peter. Where does this Irish team go from here? I mean, the lads have returned home feeling very, very downhearted. I mean, I'd say the stuffing was literally kicked out of them quicker than a plucked turkey at Christmas. But where did the lads, where do they go from here?
I suppose it's a case they'll simply regroup and go back to their provinces now and look for the Magners League and the Heineken Cup. In a way, they're lucky in a sense that, unlike, say, a soccer World Cup where you have a couple of months off after you do, if you have a poor performance, you have time to think about it. Whereas yeah. the they won't really have much time because they'll be going straight back into their provinces, training and then going out on the field and playing as soon as possible. So they don't have much time to dwell on it. Also, there's an awful lot of the older players who we may not see in an Ireland jersey again. So, it's not, I suppose for them, there's going to be a major disappointment, but in a sense, we could see them, that disappointment being played out on the field for their provinces. So you could actually see Munster and Leinster and, to a lesser extent, Ulster given, you know, a great going in the Magners League and the Heineken Cup.
Yeah, Alan, just going to the point about the fans, I mean, the Irish fans were really, really good at the World Cup, and the support that they had back home was unbelievable. But how gutted do you feel like is the country at the moment? I mean, for me personally, having to turn around and watch that a bit of that Munster game on that evening, it just didn't feel right. I mean, the Munster-Magners League clash, I mean, I found it very difficult to watch, although a lot of the players that had been playing in Munster and Leinster that haven't been in the World Cup have done really well. They've really stepped up to the mark. But how difficult was it to go back and watch club rugby after that disappointment?
Are you referring to the Munster Ospreys game?
Yeah.
I was actually at that game.
Right.
And yeah, it was a very, I wouldn't say funeral atmosphere, but there was a bit of a hangover for sure. And I think when Mikko threw that intercept pass, I knew that it wasn't going to be our day. But again, back to your point about the Irish fans at the tournament, I was incredible. I mean, there's so many expats out there now in New Zealand and Australia that, I mean, nearly all of our games were home games. Just the support we got was incredible. And I think the biggest disappointment for me was that before the World Cup, the suggestion was that, you know, we'll lose to Australia, we'll scrape past Italy, and we'll get knocked out in the quarters by South Africa. And actually, I would have been more happy with that than what happened now
against
this time,
because so much hope.
Exactly, because when we beat Australia, people were going, Jesus, we've just beaten the second best team in the world, and, you know, yeah, Italy be fine, and then Wales in the quarter final, sure it'll be grand. But so I mean, and I, you know, in fairness, I thought too that when you see Wales, you know, we've beaten them before, we can beat them on our day. England are, and you know, before their quarter final, you're looking at England and France thinking these guys aren't up to it at all.
Yeah.
You're thinking New Zealand in the final without Dan Carter, we might just have a chance. But
well, I think that was a bit, you know, that was definitely out of order coming from a lot of Irish fans. A lot of pundits were talking about Ireland getting to a World Cup final, and I think that was, you know, they were certainly shooting the boat before they landed the fish, you know.
Well, I mean, to be honest, after the Australia-Italy game, you know, I think we were allowed to dare to dream. It's that sort of hope that is absolutely crushing now. Because how can we beat Australia and then not beat Wales? On paper, Wales are absolutely superb, and they deserve to win. And I'll be cheering either themselves or France on in the final, because I'd like a Northern Hemisphere team to win the final. Just so the Tri Nations teams can have a bit of a kick up the arse. But
it is
disappointing.
Okay, well, I want to move on, lads, and look at the other semi-final. Of course, South Africa losing out to Australia, the team that came second in Ireland's group. South Africa, the World Cup winners in 2007. Peter, how Australia won this game, I guess we'll never know, but, you know, South Africa gone, that's a big loss for them.
South Africa would have, I think everyone was pretty much tipping South Africa to win this game, because it played out how we all expected, that South Africa would simply choke Australia. And they actually did a better job at it than I expected. But I'm lost for words at actually how Australia got away with this one. I mean, I know in South Africa they're all complaining about Bryce Lawrence and the refereeing decisions. I agree that the penalty that won it for Australia. I don't think that was a penalty.
Yeah.
The Australian lifter simply just didn't lift her man, and South Africa got penalised for it. But at the end of the day, South Africa, I don't know how they didn't win this game, because Australia looked very ordinary. The only thing that, in a way, it was somewhat similar to Ireland against Australia, and the fact that our defence was fantastic against Australia. So this time Australia pulled it out of the bag, and they defended brilliantly to be under that much pressure and still come away with the win.
Yeah.
It really was a case of, you know, Australia have now not played great in two of their big games, and they now find themselves in a World Cup semi-final. I just can't explain it. It's like the gods are on Australia's sides at the moment.
Yeah, it certainly is. And Alan, word on the street down in Limerick is that you're a wee bit of a betting man, and a lot of people were wondering what kind of bet you would have put on this game. I always had the feeling that you would have gone for South Africa, even though you kind of slated them in the Tri Nations because of the team they had fielded. You still probably went for South Africa, though, after seeing Australia in the World Cup so far.
Yeah, in my zombie state at 6 in the morning, I got up to watch the game, and yes, of course, I had to have money on the box, and I was just tearing my hair out watching the game. I just could not believe how one-sided a game could be, where the team that was so dominant didn't win. And I don't agree with the awful abuse that Bryce Lawrence is getting on Facebook. There's really no need for it, and it leaves a sour taste, I think, in the mouth. But he only reffed one team, and there's no doubt about it. The Aussies, I suppose, they can argue that they did play to the ref, and Pocock did that to perfection. He was absolutely superb in what he did, and he leads by example, and I think he's a future Wallaby captain, Pocock. He's a sensational player.
Mm.
But whatever you can say about the ref, I mean, South Africa blew it spectacularly. I mean, for a guy who loves to kick drop goals and who generally goes for that option, I was shocked that Morne Steyn didn't opt for a drop goal when it was clear that the try was just going to elude them. They just weren't going to score it. It was just going wrong in every sort of facet. And the last penalty was dubious, although I suppose you could ask what Rousseau was doing. You know, should he have risked putting his arms in there? Should he have just said, no, I'll leave it just in case, because the referee is screwing us over big time?
Yeah. But,
yeah, you have to credit Australia for sticking in there. I mean, they made, what, 150 tackles, and they were brave, and I suppose they kept their discipline at the key moments to keep the box out, and James O'Connor kicked the goal when he really needed to. So
I guess though, at the same time, it's probably a shame that we'll never see the likes of Matfield on the world stage now. He probably deserved a bit better than that at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it is going to be a transitional period for the box now. There's a lot of 30-pluses, 30-somethings in the team, like Smith and Matfield and Botha. So, yeah, it is a shame for Matfield, because I have big respect for him. He's one of the best locks, I'd say, in the professional era. So it is sad, but I suppose that's sport.
Yeah, and Peter, how about the Vive la France, Vive Liberté, French pulling it out of the bag after defeat to Tonga? You know, I don't know where to start with Livermont. Is it true that the team just didn't listen to him and they came up with their own tactics, or what is going on here?
No, I think, you know, is it the official line? Now, I haven't been reading much rugby this week, purely due to the fact of the whole Ireland game. But I think the team are pretty much coming out and saying, well, no, we took our share of responsibility. So they're not saying that Livermont has been kicked out, but I think they are kind of saying, in a sense, that, listen, we're making a lot, we're having more of an input. So read into that what you will. It is pretty much a case of, we were all claiming that Livermont was a complete madman.
Yeah.
But he's starting to look like a bit of a genius. I mean, he's like Columbo going around, you know.
there is that fine line, though, between madness and being a genius.
I know, but the thing with France is they've always, their players have always had this complete and utter flippant attitude in that they don't take responsibility for anything on the pitch if they play poorly. Because for some reason it always falls back on the manager, and the managers get so much criticism, and because the managers tend to be quite poor for France, that the players don't tend to give much effort. But the players now, they actually seem to be coming out and saying that we're taking shoulder and responsibility. So in his own mad way, Livramont has actually united this French group of players, which never seems to happen with France. So
yeah,
Livramont is a rugby genius now.
So, oh, come on over that now. Let's not get carried away and let's see what happens. Alan, England, Johnson can't get a break. He's returned, they returned back to England, they tried to shield them from the media. He says that I think a lot of people are coming out saying that this is a disaster for England, you know, he should be gone. And what do you think about the whole thing? I mean, the press were against England, I guess, from the get-go, and they, as they usually are in international tournaments, but what do you think about England's performance at this World Cup?
Well, I think I made my thoughts clear last week, and they haven't really changed. I mean, the England were just disastrous. And I don't think there's an adjective strong enough in the English language to describe how bad they were. And it's a shame because they're a great rugby nation. And, you know, I suppose it's hard for me, it's hard for us as Irish fans to be objective about this. But
yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a shame because they just everyone doesn't like them because I talked about the arrogance of some of their players last week, thinking they're rock stars, and you know,
what about Tuilagi and the jumping off the bridge? I mean,
he was
like a loose cannon waiting to happen, something like that.
I don't think there was much in that. I think that was a bet he lost with other players, so I wouldn't make too much of that, to be honest.
I might have been falling into the media trap there then.
Yeah, there was a media boat there waiting to trap him, maybe, I don't know. No, it's a shame. England, they're not a talented side, they're not great, and France finally woke up to expose them. Whether Livramont is a genius or not we'll wait and see, but I think the return of Nicolas Massa at prop was huge for them, because he's a great tight head, and they absolutely destroyed the English scrum. And then you saw Aaron Ardiki and Clerk and Maidar, you know, finally producing the goods. And it's fantastic for the tournament that France got through, because I think the best four sides to watch in terms of quality of rugby, that they're in the semis now.
Yeah.
And whether Johnson will stay on, I mean, that's up for debate. I don't think there's going to be too many applicants for the job, because that position just seems like a poison chalice. And I can't see there being, you know, a plethora of great names, great rugby coaches looking to coach England.
Yeah, well, that's true. Martin Johnson, he's a man that doesn't smile, although the English rugby team wouldn't give him too much to smile about. Peter, New Zealand versus Argentina. We were expecting New Zealand to win, and they did, but Argentina quite put it up to them. Were you impressed by this Argentina pack?
Argentina were As expected, they were always going to give a draw. If there's one thing you know with Argentina, whatever their limitations are, and especially this team had an awful lot of limitations, because they're nowhere near the 2007 level, but Argentina, they will always give it 100%, and that's what they did. They gave it their all, but they simply ran out of fuel, and New Zealand, as expected, just pulled away. It really was a case of the inevitable. But you have to give Argentina a lot of credit, because they do, for the resources they have and the playing population, and the fact that they're alienated from everywhere, is such a credit that Argentina are consistently up there reaching World Cup quarterfinals.
Yeah, and Alan, so far Argentina probably scored the try of the tournament.
It was a great try, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. It was sensational. I just remember Contepomi's touch, just with the one hand controlling the ball, and his ability to flick it out the back door was incredible. But Argentina, they were never going to win that game, and it's a case of job done for New Zealand. And Argentina, I mean, we've got, so over the years, we've gotten used to seeing the likes of Ledesma, Roncero, Contepomi, Scalzo, Albacete all playing for them, and now they're all going to be gone. So it's a big end of an era for Argentina. I think just this tournament came, I think two years too late for them. And really, as Peter said, you know, the 2017 was their zenith, and I think after that they dropped off very, very quickly. On New Zealand, I suppose the positives were Piriwipu's goal kicking was sensational. And when Aaron Cruden came on, he looked okay. I mean, nobody's going to match up to Carter, but I think Cruden did the job all right. He was okay.
Yeah.
And he did the job that was asked of him, and he'll start now against Australia. But, you know, Sonny Bill did okay in the wing, but again, he mightn't get back in the team. I felt sorry for Mully Aina. It was a great moment for him getting his 100 cap, and he didn't deserve to get injured and bust his shoulder like he did and only last 40 minutes. But I was delighted for him to get his 100 cap because he's been a great player for the All Blacks, and he deserved to reach the milestone, even though Dag is probably a better option now. But yeah. I suppose they'll just say, you know, we won the game, got out of there, onwards to the semi-final.
Yeah, okay, but it'll be interesting to see. And I think that's a point that you made, Alan, you know, about the whole drama of the World Cup. It is kind of like a sad fairy tale for a lot of teams, you know, where players will never experience that again. And at the end of eras, the beginning of new eras, World Cup's coming too soon, too late. It could be written in a book, and I guess we will see it in years to come. But we still have a beautiful semi-finals, two semi-finals to look forward to, Peter. Starting with you, and we've got the old Welsh-French semi-final. Two great languages going up against each other. How do you think this game is going to be? I'd imagine it'll be open. We don't know what's going to happen through France, but Wales are going to go for this one.
Well, Wales will definitely go for it, and so will France. It'll be a cracker. I think it's a complete utter mouth-watering affair. To be honest, I'd say an awful lot of people on the outside looking in would have actually wished for this when they saw. They would have wished that it would have been Wales and France, not Ireland versus England. Because you have two teams who will go out with the aim of scoring more than the other team. Wales, as we saw, have a fantastic scrum. You know, their scrum was the first scrum to actually stand up to the Irish scrum, and that probably goes to show how strong it is.
Yeah.
Their back row is, as we were discussing earlier, they have a phenomenal back row. And it is a case of, when you look, a lot of their damage that they done against Ireland was with regards to their centre partnership. And also on the wings, they have serious pace with Williams and North, so they can finish out wide.
Sorry for cutting across you though, Peter, yeah. But is there a case that could be said that Wales have played their best game of the tournament already, and which was against Ireland, and that, you know, from here on, they might not be able to keep it going? And that's happened before with Ireland, when teams play against Ireland and they seem to have the game of their lives, and then they go out and they just throw it all away. Ideally, as an Irish fan, you'd like to see Wales go on and win it.
No,
not you, Peter.
No. I think it's a case of, especially when you're looking through Irish eyes, we tend to think anyone who beats us has overperformed, and you know that they'll never play like that again. Mm. This Welsh team, tactically against Ireland, they were brilliant, and every player, man, 1 to 15, is a very good player. And Wales have been consistently performing in the tournament, so there's no reason why they won't go out. And the thing is, with the Welsh mentality, they won't fear France one bit. They'll look forward to this battle. I mean, they went out, they were pumped up for Ireland, and they went out for battle, and they bet us in battle, and they'll do the same against France. So I don't think that Wales, it is a case of Wales peaked too early, because I think Wales are actually getting a rich vein of consistency, especially with all those young players. I don't think at all that they have peaked. I think it's a case of, you could ask more, have France actually peaked?
Yeah.
it's on paper, we always discuss, it is a case of France are a phenomenal team on paper. But the problem is, can France actually string together two consistent performances? I mean, to be honest, can they even string together a second half performance? Well, France tend to perform in one half and not the other. So it will be a case of, can France actually put it together?
Alan, do you think they can put it together? Do you think France are like a, you know, the maybe if they can get two halves of performance, they could be a real, you know, as Peter said, a world-beating team?
Well, on paper, they are a world-beating team, but the consistency question always crops up with France, doesn't it? And I think it's impossible to predict, so I'm just going to sit in the fence and say maybe they will, maybe they won't. Mm. On the team they've named, they've gone for the same 22. I cannot believe they're not starting Tranduc. It's just crazy that they've kept Para at 10, because Tranduc, when he came on, He actually was the match winner for France with his tactical kicking, and just he took the drop goal at the end when it was the right decision. And I'm shocked that he's gone for Para. I mean, he said, I think today or yesterday, that the Para gamble paid off. Lee Evermore said that, and I'm just wondering, what, like, was he watching a different game to what I was watching? Because Para did well, but Tranduc, when he came on, he just stamped his authority immediately, and he pinned England back in the corners and frustrated them and sealed the victory, really, for France. I think that the big battle in this game, it will be the centre partnership. I mean, if you look at Roberts and Davies against a huge guy like Rougerie, I mean, that's a mouth-watering tie. And, of course, Mermaza at 12, he's a very creative player. We mentioned the phrase a jack in the box before. He can definitely produce something from nothing, whereas Rougerie is more of he's a very, very good player, but he's a bash him up. He's definitely a guy that'll break a line. But Mermaz at 12 is certainly a player that is creative, while Rougerie is your bog standard bash it up the middle and go through the defense rather than around them.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Peter, would you go along with that? You know, they, as Alan was saying, we've got bash 'em ups, we've got jack in the boxes. It's gonna be a great game. And are you gonna sit on the fence like Alan is on this game? Do you have those splinters up your backside?
No, I'll risk making a call on it. I've been wrong so far, so I might as well keep it going.
You want to be careful. You don't have those lads around to your door. The bookies.
Alan settled up with them for me, so
Some of those predictions, I'm telling you, so far they've been it's been a bit of a roller coaster by you, Peter, so far.
Yeah, oh no, they have totally, but sure, you know, I'm turning into a bit of a George Hook in that sense. So I am. For me, I'd agree 100% with Alan. Parrot fly half is it's another strange one, especially considering that Trinduk actually did play well when he came on, and I can see it's going to be the very same as when O'Gara was at fly half. You're going to have the likes of Phillips and Roberts and Davies just running hard and fast over him, so that could really put a big dent in France. It would be a case of there'll be a serious battle at the breakdown, and I think France will fare quite well because they won't stand off like Ireland. The likes of Dusseldorf, Bonaire and Harnardicky, they won't be dominated by Wales, and they'll go out with fire in the bellies and they'll attack everything. I think Wales, I think Priestland is a I'm not sure if the teams have been named yet, but he's a bit of an injury doubt. So, but with Hook coming on, they're not going to lose much because I think Hook is a fantastic player.
Yeah.
So I think as a prediction goes, it's going to be Wales by a very narrow margin because they're more consistent over the 80 minutes.
Yeah, well, you're saying about injury doubts, and I know that Welsh team, there was a few of the lads went out on quad bikes. A few of them didn't really get the hang on the quad bikes, and there might have well have been a few more injuries. I know they were feeling a little soft after the Ireland game, but the manager was saying that they hope to have a full squad, and you know, the lads were going around on the quad bikes, the fellas that were 100% fit, so they reckon they will have a full fleet of players to pick from. Peter, just to bring you to the New Zealand-Australia game, what a game. We've got New Zealand, hosts of the World Cup, They've got the media attention on them, the expectancy. They were awesome in a lot of the World Cup. However, they've got injuries. Australia, since losing to Ireland, they might have had that kick up the rear end that they have needed. This is a difficult one to call.
It wouldn't be so difficult if New Zealand were at full complement, because I actually don't think Australia haven't been performing, so I would have come straight out and say New Zealand to win. But because New Zealand, there's so many injury doubts, you know, the loss of Carter, then Slade, then it's McCaw has a big injury doubt hanging over him. So it really is a case of so much could change in this game. If McCaw, there's a big battle between Pocock and McCaw. Now, if McCaw has to go off injured early, that could decide the game, because there's no doubt that Australia will raise their game, especially yeah. against New Zealand. And the thing is, with this Australia team, they won't fear New Zealand.
They've actually beaten them quite a bit.
Oh, they did, yeah. In the Tri Nations, they did that. They beat them, but I suppose when they were in New Zealand, New Zealand did actually beat Australia. Yeah, no, I suppose the scoreline was probably more than they deserved, but they did beat them easily enough. So this is one for sitting on the fence. But it's all about Quade Cooper. Oh, that if Genia and Cooper can click, it is a case that Australia could actually pull it out of bag and beat New Zealand. But I think I'm going to go for New Zealand to win. I just think there's too much momentum behind New Zealand. And both South Africa and Ireland have shown the light on how to beat Australia. Yeah, so New Zealand can play dirty game of frustrating you. And they have a solid pack. So I think New Zealand will adapt their game. If they're smart, they'll adapt their game and their style. And follow the route on how to beat Australia. So I'm going for New Zealand to win.
Okay, that's an interesting one. Alan, if I was to go to you, I thought the fence was going to fall over. We had a lot of people sitting on it there, but he's actually tipped it towards New Zealand. Who do you see coming out of this clash?
It's a very tough one to call, isn't it? And New Zealand are, I suppose, one injury away from disaster, as Peter said. If McCall gets hurt, they're in big, big trouble. For Australia, because the game is being played in Auckland, they're going to have to banish the nightmares of Eden Park a few weeks ago when Ireland beat them, I suppose, comfortably. It's very, very excited about this game. I suppose there's nothing really much you can add. There's nothing really much I can add to what Peter said. It is all about Cooper and Cruden as well. Cruden is stepping up hugely in intensity. When he's played at test level before, he hasn't produced at all. He looked a bit like a fish up a tree, to be honest. And Cooper, well, he can be a fish up a tree as well.
Yeah.
It depends what his mindset is. So, it's a tough one. I think goal kicking again will be crucial. Weepu is as stepped up to the plate. I think he missed only one kick against Argentina. James O'Connor is kicking very well as also. So yeah, I can't call it. I'm going to sit in the fence for the 2 seconds,
right.
I'm afraid.
that's an awful pity. But as you mentioned, you know, it could be a fish up or tree, or indeed they could be fish and chips, whatever you're having. You know, I'd like to also take this opportunity to say hello to all the listeners on boards.ie, and there's a lot of discussions on the boards, on the rugby forum on boards, and one of the mainly ones is about the Thornley christened golden generation of Irish rugby. They finally reached, I guess, a stage, lads, where they're no longer going to see a World Cup. Peter, we have the likes of Brian O'Driscoll, Gordon Darcy, David Wallace, Ronan O'Gara, Paul O'Connell, Jordan Murphy, Leo Cullen. It's got to be difficult to think, and it's very hard to think. And as Brian O'Driscoll said at the press conference, knowing that we're not going to be at another World Cup, that really sucks. It does, though, doesn't it?
It does suck, but I suppose that's sport, really. It's a case of your career is only so long, and you try to accomplish and achieve as much as you can. We've been very fortunate to have some exceptional rugby players coming through. And while they may not always have been coached correctly with the national side, with their provinces, they've more than filled their boots full of trophies and given fans a lot to cheer about. But yeah, we do. We have an awful lot of boots to fill. I suppose it's a case of looking at the management for Kidney. It's how does he approach it now? There are an awful lot of guys, 31, 32. Their career could go on for another year or two, but realistically, they won't hit another World Cup in 4 years. So it is a case of does he look to do a clear out now, or will he just try and prolong careers for another one or two seasons and hope that some of the younger players in the provinces may stake their claim now? I suppose it is a case of trying to understand, you know, what is the best way to do it. There really is no tried and tested. It works for some and it doesn't work for others. If you look at Wales, they just throw a group of young lads in and see how it goes. It works for them.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, yeah. Yeah, Alan, do you think that, you know, the lads at the Irish provinces, the younger lads, will step up to the mark? We've seen them, you know, while all eyes have been on the Irish team in New Zealand, there has been some terrific performances by younger lads from the provinces. And now this year, is with like Connacht in the Heineken Cup, it's going to bring a few more lads that we haven't got to see at a high-class rugby in. Do you think they'll be able to step up?
Well, I suppose the reaction at the moment is, oh, we have to clear out the team. And on reflection, it's not the right way to go about it. I guarantee you by Six Nations time, I think 10 or 11 of the players will still be there, and there might be one or two changes. You know, there are, as you said, there's a lot of 30-somethings in the current squad, and I'm a bit concerned that there's only a few youngsters in the provinces really putting their hands up. And the worrying thing, again, is when the internationals come back into the team, will those youngsters still get the game time? In terms of players, you know, I think Peter O'Mahony down at Munster, he took up the captaincy for the Pro 12 side at the start of the season, and he's been excellent. So maybe he might get... I'm hoping that he'll stay in the team for the Munster's Heineken Cup campaign and get a look in maybe in the Ireland squad. Craig Gilroy up at Ulster, the winger, he's just scoring tries for fun.
Yeah, he looks good.
He's an incredible talent. He has that spark about him that whenever he gets the ball, the crowd... expect something's going to happen. And I suppose Luke Fitzgerald at Leinster, he would have been absolutely gutted to miss out in the squad. But Joe Schmidt has moved him to 12, and now he looks a much better player.
Yeah. What do you think, Peter? The lads that Alan has mentioned are obviously they've still got a long careers to go. And you know, we were talking about Luke Fitzgerald and that. I mean, it was probably unlucky that he wasn't at the World Cup due to a few injuries and poor form. But he'll have the chance, and a lot of others will have the chance to stake their claim in future Irish squads.
They will, yeah. Well, we have a good bunch of younger players, and it is a case of we just need to fill the spots for a lot of those guys going. When you look at the second row, you know, we're in serious trouble there with regards to the likes of Leo, we've O'Connell and we've O'Callaghan. They're all in their 30s, so they're going to go. But I think, too, I would have brought him from Ulster. I think he's very good. He's a guy that can really step up to mark, and we should see him in the squad for the next Six Nations. Just to try and give him as much game time as possible. And also Nagel down in Munster, he must surely be, you know, on the verge of staking the claim, you know, in the Munster, a starting position at Munster. So there are players, so it is a case of, it is really a case of, more so with the provincial rugby, that the young players get game time, and that's the important thing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Well, we want to thank, that was a suggestion actually by the boss 80 a few weeks ago on boards.ie, and we thank him for that. And a few of the other issues that are actually being discussed on boards, lads. Should we bring back Eddie O'Sullivan as backs coach? There's been a bit of a criticism obviously of backs coach Alan Gaffney. What do you think, Peter?
Yeah, well, thank God Gaffney's gone now. I don't think Gaffney has really done anything since taking over the this supposed, you know, mantle of trying to orchestrate something with our backs. He has done nothing. Eddie, yeah, there's no denying that Eddie O'Sullivan tactically is a fantastic backs coach. I mean, the guy just eats and drinks rugby. He knows how to get players, you know, combinations working. But it's not going to happen. And it wouldn't work anyway, even if he did come back in. I mean, Eddie O'Sullivan, he's a head coach. He's not going to come back and actually just work as a bit part answering to somebody. Nah,
yeah, you'd agree with that, Alan. It's never going to happen.
Well, I suppose it is true that the Irish backs played superb rugby under O'Sullivan. But I agree with Peter, it just wouldn't work. I think Eddie said it himself recently that when he was head coach and Declan Kidney was his assistant, it was uncomfortable because it was a head coach in Declan Kidney answering to another head coach in O'Sullivan.
Yeah.
So it just wouldn't work. Gaffney, just the backs were pretty much pedestrian and didn't really produce much. I'd love to know what the game plan was, or, you know, because Gaffney would have had something prepared. It's not like the backs weren't prepared or had nothing up their sleeve. They would have, but just disappointing. And I'm not sure who they'll bring in. I can't think of any names off the top of my head, but I suppose it was the biggest disappointment of the World Cup.
Do you think, Alan, we could ever be like Wales in the way their backs play rugby? I mean, I remember before the match against Wales, Tommy Bowe was saying they're a real kind of free-flowing where they really utilise their backs, but we can play a bit of rugby ourselves. But do you ever think our backs would be able to get to the stage of like that?
Yeah, I mean, Rob Howley at Wales, a former player, great player in his day, and yeah, he got the Wales backs performing. And it's strange just on Wales that they do nothing at regional level, yet when they go into Wales they start looking like twice the better player.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Ireland and Wales, that they have a different mentality in how we play and how they play the game. I don't think we can be as expressive as Wales or France, but I still think we can be effective and clinical. So, yeah, we need someone there that'll I suppose get us on the right track.
Yeah, and in full credit, you know, to put a bit of, you know, power behind Ireland and you know, to talk up for them. I suppose a lot of people could argue, well, in Wales it is their national game. You know, it's probably fair. There's a bit of reactionary stuff, lads, on the forum. Something that read, should Brian O'Driscoll hang up his boots? That's, I guess, to get a reaction out of people. And what would your reaction to that be, Peter?
Strangely enough, I would say that somebody posted that and it wasn't to get a reaction out of people.
Really?
It's interesting when you read boards. Yeah, you just get a multitude of different opinions, and I suppose that's life. And it is, honestly, no. There's no way Bod should hang up his boots. I think he's our greatest rugby player ever, and he's still performing to a fantastic level. I mean, if is there any player out there in a green jersey who could fill the spot for him? No.
No.
So I think, yeah, he O'Driscoll has earned the right to hang up the boots when he decides, and I think he's a sensible guy, and he will do it when he feels the time is right. And I'd hate to see him being forced out.
Yeah, Alan, you'd probably go along with that. I mean, Brian O'Driscoll, I wouldn't like to be the player that would try to dislodge him from that 13 position.
Yeah, there's no 13 in the provinces that comes close to him at the moment. I think it's very unfair. I mean, you're going to get posts like that want to blame someone, and I think to blame O'Driscoll is just not right. I mean, I thought he played well against Wales, actually.
Yeah.
The players around him didn't perform, but he did his best. I think he'll remain our captain until he retires. I think he's got a 2-year contract left with Leinster and Ireland at least. And I've no doubt he's probably targeting the 2013 Lions Tour as his last hurrah, because I think the Lions Tour, a bit like the World Cup, has been his kind of unachieved goal that he wants to win a Lions series, because he's been a great player for the Lions, but
yeah,
he's never won a series. So I think that will be, he's probably hoping that the Lions series will be a swan song. And between now and then, I've no doubt he'll play as well as he has been playing. To say he should hang up his boots is it's just nonsense, really.
It's crazy altogether. What about what do you think about the Lions, Peter? Would you think there's many Lions 2013 players that could be that have been impressing at the Rugby World Cup?
Yeah, you could pretty much stick. I suppose they're all the Welsh team already wear red jerseys, so you could just pretty much line them up. Yeah, no, for Wales, a lot of guys have been impressing, you know, like so Warburton, North Priestland. They've had a lot of players. I suppose from the other teams, it's a case of, as we said, Scotland are a one-man team. Richie Gray is there. For Ireland, O'Brien was performing excellently. England, it's very hard to actually know who to pick for England. I think there's no denying that Foden is still a great player and Ashton's a good winger. So yeah, it is a case of Wales have really impressed. So you're going to see the vast chunk of Lions players probably coming from Wales.
Would you go along with that, Alan? And I'll put it the point to you that the majority of, to judge now is a bit, you know, it's a bit crazy because the majority of Lions players usually come from the team that has won the previous Six Nations. Like when Ireland won the Grand Slam in 2009, Ireland had a huge amount of players represented on that Lions team.
Yeah, no, it will be a form selection, hopefully. Hopefully the coach will pick on form. Well, I suppose as they were looking on boards, the potential lines that were impressing now, I mean, Keane Healy, Richie Gray, Warburton again, and I think Warburton will be the captain. He's my pick to be the captain. Mike Phillips again, he had a great tour in 09. He's back to his best again, as Peter said, Priestland and Foden and Ashton. But I suppose, yeah, it is down the track, and I suppose it is fun to look at a sort of to discuss a kind of a Lions 15 now, but it could be a very different team come 2013.
Oh, big time! It'll be an interesting one, and if you guys are right, I can promise you you're both betting men, so you should both put a few quid on that, and we'll see what happens. Well, I'm afraid we've run out of time here on Talking Rugby with Dave O'Grady. Don't forget, we're podcasting on iTunes. Just type it in, Talking Rugby to iTunes, and you will find us. So big hello to everybody on boards.ie. We'll be talking to you again next week, same time, same place. Thanks, lads.
Cheers, thanks.
You're listening to The World's Talking with Dave O'Grady. Don't forget, if you have a story, an internet forum, a discussion you want to have, email theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to click like on Facebook, like on Twitter, like on everything, and we'll chat to you then.